It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, John.
It is Friday. Second day of first round action is off and running. Florida Atlantic Northwestern already almost at halftime, 18-16. FAU leading Northwestern. What a day yesterday. John Calipari.
Yeesh.
Story of the day yesterday. A couple of upsets, a couple of interesting games. Still waiting for that buzzer beater to get going here as well. We got a lot to get into today as LSU gets back on the diamond, taking on Florida, looking for their first SEC series win of the season. Tulane, UNO, and Nichols, they begin conference play on the baseball diamond. So we'll follow that here as well. We'll get a handful of topics with those folks here as well, as we normally do with the coaches on Tuesday. So we'll follow, obviously, what the baseball programs are doing here as well. 12:15, Jake Madison is going to join us. Chris Blair at 12:30, voice of the LSU Tigers. Got a ton to get into. Leo Haggerty, 1:15. Jeff Boggs from ESPN Bet at 1:45. Ali Cosell covers the Pelicans in the NBA. He's a 2:05 Marlin favorite. Will join us at 2:15. And as you know, it is beautiful. It was nasty this morning. If right around kid drop off, workout, you know, morning drive time, weather was awful. Thunderstorms, heavy rain. It is beautiful. It's moved past us. It is absolutely gorgeous. It's sunny. The weather's nice. And the Blue Angels are in town this weekend. I'm going to be heading over there to the base over in Bell Chase tomorrow to go check them out. So, got a lot to get into here. Let's get going.
It's Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Friday, getting down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Partying.
Always looking forward to the weekend, especially that March Madness going on. As we said, at the weekend before Easter, lots of festivities, Easter egg hunts, things of that nature, Palm Sunday, air show. I'm always loving an air show. Kind of snuck up on me. Thanks, Dad, for letting me know that they're actually in town. Get a chance to go check them out. Got a Sunday Pelicans game here as well against the Pistons. A little matinee, 2 p.m. Got a big one tonight in Miami, so we're going to preview that and, of course, go over the big story in last night's game. Pels did lose, but Brandon Ingram was injured in the game. So give you the very latest. The Pels this morning around 9:30 gave us a medical update on Brandon Ingram. I'll just say it could have been worse, right? Hour one brought to you by No Wake Outfitters, your one-stop shop for all things fly fishing on the Gulf Coast and kayaks. 1926 Airline Drive over in Metairie, where that's at. Across from Premier Fitness, the big furniture store, just past that toy store. It's been there forever. NoWakeOutfitters.com is the way to go check them out online. You can give us a call in those open segments on the Ruderman Can caller and guest hotline, 800-998-1003, RuderManCan.com. If you want to go see all the different services they have, 262-8222 is the way to chime in and see what they have to do if you need any of those services. I called them a while back, and it worked perfectly. They know what they're doing, so check them out there as well. Again, Buddy will take your phone calls over in the LaRose studios. We got a lot to get into. We'll continue to update you on those games. I wonder how your brackets are doing. Lots of people, including myself, had Kentucky going a lot further than they did. Well, they're out. They're not around anymore. The LSU women's basketball team looks to start their defense of the national championship today at 3 against Rice over at the PMAC. So we'll touch on a little bit of that as well. So we said Chris Blair is going to join us at the bottom of this hour. Jake Madison next hour, because it is our lead.
Time now for The Lead. The Lead. The Lead. The Lead. Here's what's topping our headlines on the Sports Hangover.
All right, Pelicans lost 121-106. We can get into the details of the game, and I can just summarize it kind of briefly. 2-for-8 beyond the arc in the first half. Things started out well. Pels got out to a 12-point lead. And then, well, what happened? C.J. McCollum describes the loss in short. 6 seconds, to be exact.
We started off great, and then we had a slow end of the first quarter, and then we got off to a poor start in the second quarter, and it was just downhill from there.
The end of the first quarter, the Magic ended it on a 9-2 run. Second quarter, the Pels had 8 points at 1 point. They lose the quarter pretty big. They still were just down 9 at halftime, but just never could really get going. Orlando won that second quarter 34-20, won the third 38-27. Pels did win the fourth 31-26 to make it interesting. But it's what happened at the 9-minute mark in the third quarter that has everyone worried and talking about here in New Orleans and out in the league as well. Brandon Ingram, non-contact injury right around the free throw line. Basically, the right elbow he plants and his left leg kind of just stiffens and doesn't bend. It's a hyperextension of the knee, kind of looks like from that aspect. And it was rough, to say the least, when you looked at it. Now, this was last night, Willie Green.
We don't have any information right now. He's getting, other than he's getting an MRI and getting some imaging done.
Okay, so that was what happened. The Pelicans, 9:35 this morning, put out New Orleans Pelicans forward Brandon Ingram underwent an MRI after hyperextending his left knee during the third quarter of last night's game. The results of the MRI revealed a left knee bone contusion. It's a bruise. Ingram will be reevaluated in 2 weeks, and additional updates will be appropriately provided. So let's break that down as much as possible. First and foremost, you breathe a sigh of relief because it's as good as it could have been. Yes, he's going to miss time, which we'll get into here in a quick sec. But it's not a tear. It's not season-ending. When you watched him go down, grab the knee, writhe in pain, be helped out, but really not that much pressure on it. He did walk off with assistance. They just changed the entire mood watching the rest of the game, for sure. C.J. McCollum.
Messed up the mood. The whole mood is not great. We're praying for him, hoping for the best. You know, B.I. is a really good human being, obviously a great basketball player, but solid human being, loves the game, and we all want what's best for him, and obviously what's best for our team, so we're hoping for the best.
Willie Green.
It's extremely difficult to see him go down. Our prayers will be going up tonight, and you know, hopefully we get some good news back.
All right, Trey on B.I.
Obviously, like, it hurts because, you know, you've been through there. You've been there, and you obviously hope there's nothing wrong with him. And, you know, he's been a big help for me, my career, my progression, my whole maturation process. And so, you know, just seeing him go down like that definitely hurts a lot. So definitely just pray for him.
All right, so obviously everyone was affected by it, and you saw it because last night was the 63rd game of the season. As Graf and JD on the broadcast kept bringing up, that tied his career high. He's played the most games. He's been available. He's been awesome on defense. He's been sharing the basketball. He scores when you need him to. He's playing probably the best basketball of his career. And, of course, right at the worst time of the season, this takes place. And, again, it's one of those freak things. He just planted trying to guard a Magic player driving to the basket, and the knee hyperextends and doesn't bend. And that happens. Jeff Duncan tweeted a little bit ago here as well with those bone contusions. They're tricky. They're painful. But, again, there's nothing structurally wrong with it in terms of there's no tears, no surgery needed. So you can technically start that rehab process. First thing that popped in my head as I brought up this morning in the Pels podcast is I'm looking at the totality of the season with the Pelicans. And players that have been injured, that have missed time, and pretty much everyone kind of has, right, to an extent. Jose, Trey, Dyson is on his way back. And look, he's practicing fully. He's trying to get his conditioning. We'll get into how this is going to affect the roster, the rotation, starting, and all of that. But Zion, CJ, all of the players that have missed time or suffered an injury during the season have gotten back in, I would say, appropriate time for whatever that injury is, right? And the reason why I bring that up and why it's so important is because it has been an issue the last couple of years, especially since Zion's been here. where somebody goes down, somebody gets injured, and an ankle, a foot, a toe, a shoulder, something, it seems like it takes longer than normal. Zion's hamstring. Now, again, part of that, maybe it's the medical staff. They're reevaluating or getting things done. Players, how much effort are they putting into their rehab? Things of that nature. They addressed that at the end of last year. If you listen to David Griffin, Willie Green, players, something had to change. So they made changes either to the staff. They challenged players to get into better shape, including Zion, to be able to withstand injury. And more importantly, when you do get injured, because you're going to play 82 games, hopefully, right? Or in those games, there's a possibility you're going to get injured. Again, this is it's one of those freak things. You plant, you step, this happens. The better shape you're in, the easier it is to come back from an injury. Why am I delving into this? Well, because when you look from the beginning of the season to now, Pelicans players that have missed time due to injury tend to come back, as I said, in either an appropriate amount of time or sooner rather than later. So whatever they're doing has worked. Whatever it is that they did in the offseason seems to be working. I bring that up because when the team says we're going to evaluate you in 2 weeks, well, let's hope that it's good news, as in he's progressing, as in we'll get him back soon. All right, we don't have to be incredibly intelligent to know it's March 22nd. The season ends April 14th. 2 weeks. What is 2 weeks? 2 weeks from today is April 5th. It's a Friday. The Pelicans close out their six-game homestand against the Spurs that night. So, you have the Heat tonight. You have the Pistons on Sunday. And then the six-game homestand where Brandon Ingram, at the very minimum, likely will not be available. Now, I mean, let's see if before 2 weeks he's good to go and he's testing things out and maybe he can end that homestand. I'm just going by what they say. If he's not going to be until reevaluated for play until 2 weeks from now, that is the 5th of April. That is that pretty tough homestand. And look, let's be honest. I was saying the gauntlet started with that homestand. It started last night. You saw that Magic team that was pretty good. And they were battling for a 4 seed. The Miami Heat tonight, they're trying to stay out of the play-in situation. This game is absolutely important to them. They're no different than the Pelicans. They don't want to be 7. They like to be 6, just like the Pels. 6 or above guarantees you a first-round series. 4 games, minimum. The Heat are a half game back of the Pacers going into action tonight in 7th. This game means a lot to them. We haven't even gotten to what happened the last time they met about a month ago, right? So that matters here as well.
I'm sure both teams would be excited to play the game for sure. You know, no one's forgot what happened. But for us, it's about winning the game in between the lines. It's not all of the other stuff. It's being physical in the right way, executing in the right way, being disciplined in the right way, and and trying to do what we can to win the game.
So you know that you don't have him for at least those 8 games. Again, hopefully he comes back sooner. It may last longer. I'm just looking at. For this season, for the most part, the players have come back in the appropriate amount of time. You cross your fingers, you breathe a sigh of relief because it's not structural and you haven't lost them for the season, which would include the playoffs. Now, you got to get there, okay? Losses stink. I get it. It's a different feeling than 24 hours ago going to that game in Orlando. You're still 5th. Dallas is 8 games back. You're 6.5 back. The Suns, 8 games back. The Kings, 8.5 back. You're playing Phoenix twice more. Maybe with Brandon Ingram at Phoenix? Maybe not. You're not going to have him when Phoenix is here. Regardless, that's where you are right now. The Kings, 8.5 back. You have the season series on them. You're still within distance of the Clippers. They're 5 back. You're 6.5 back. So you have to breathe. And then formulate your plan. Trey Murphy likely is your starter. Guy wants a nice contract at the end of the season. It's his chance to shine and to prove it. He provides scoring. He obviously provides some defense as well. He's been a starter before. I think it's seamless. You saw him yesterday play into it here as well. But if you take him off of that rotation coming off the bench, because he was the only person off the bench that really scored for you last night, well, where does that go? Well, does Jordan Hawkins get some more playing time? And don't forget, Dyson Daniels will be coming back sooner rather than later as well. That's going to help as well defensively and bring you another body that you can use that you do trust. The staff absolutely trust him as well. The other key is you got to focus. You have got to get this top six seed. I don't think they're in a situation where, hey, you lose Brandon Ingram, you're not going to even make the play-in. They're 4-2 without Brandon Ingram. This team, I think, is deeper than they have in the past, where if they do lose one of their top players, they can't sustain. There's not enough offense. There's not enough defense. There's not enough players to do that. Zion's still playing very well. The Magic showed some things yesterday the Pels can now adjust and do to see how teams are going to play them, whether it's physically, running them off the three-point arc. We're going to play some of those bites here as well. They know what they were doing against them, and I think that's a good thing. Even in a loss, you're seeing how teams are going to be playing you in the postseason. Now you can adjust. Now you know in real time. Zion now knows that as well. So that's something to keep an eye on. And as Graf just mentioned to me, the very key part as we go to break here. If you get that sixth seed, the final game is the 14th against the Lakers. The playoffs start Saturday, the 20th. That Laker game is a Sunday. So, and again, let's say if the Pels may start on Sunday, which would be the 21st, so you would get a full week. But that extra week could also help as well if BI does come back or needs some extra time to do so as well. That six-game homestand, right after that's the Suns on the 7th, the Blazers on the 9th, the Kings and Warriors the 11th and 12th, the Lakers on the 14th, after your six-game homestand, which again, that Spurs game, April 5th, that's when he's going to be re-evaluated. So your hope is, at bare minimum, things go great. You can have him at least towards the end of that road trip. Kings, Warriors, Lakers, don't see him playing the back-to-back, maybe one of those two. But even better, you just hope that you have him for the postseason. And that's 2 weeks past, essentially, where he's going to be re-evaluated. Re-evaluated is the 5th. The playoffs start the 20th. That's a lot of time in between. So, it stinks he's down. It could have been worse. Jake Madison joins us next on ESPN New Orleans.
He's the best invention since they started frosting Pop-Tarts. Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Catania.
Think about it for sure. But, I think more so losing tonight definitely adds a little more fuel to the fire than what happened a month ago.
That is Trey Murphy last night when asked about, hey, you got the Heat tomorrow night. Do you remember what happened a month ago? And he's right. You got to get those wins. Jake Madison, help us kind of get our minds right and wrap around what's happened here with the Brandon Ingram injury. Locked on, Pels. I know Jake, the way to follow over our next. Jake, as always, appreciate the time. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on, Gus.
Let's start with the obvious, man. You see him go down. First thing that went through your head.
It didn't look good. That was a nasty-looking left knee injury for Brandon Ingram, and it kind of made the season flash before our eyes, I think, a little bit, where I think a lot of people's initial reaction was the season is over. But I immediately put out, this team still has a lot to play for. They're still going to be competitive. So even with that injury, no matter what it ended up being maybe on the good side of things, where right now he's ruled out for 2 weeks, and then they'll reevaluate. This team has been competitive. They're 4-2 when Brandon Ingram doesn't play this season. So I think there's still a good chance they can hold where they are for a postseason run.
One of the things I said in the opening segment, Jake, is I look at the totality of the season, and one of the things that this team did in the offseason, they addressed it. It's something that we talked about all the time, and it's plagued this team for the last couple of years. Getting back from injury, trying to avoid those injuries. And when you look at players that have gone down this season, Jake, pretty much everyone's, missed something for something. What they did in the offseason, I think, really helped in terms of being able to get players back in the appropriate amount of time, don't you think? And also get them healthy. I guess what I'm trying to get at is they did some things in the offseason to make sure that if players did go down, they would come back quicker than in the past, perhaps?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, one of the questions I get asked a lot is who's the MVP of the team? And on a team with Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, and CJ McCollum, it's a little bit tough to kind of single out one and say, like, this is the guy that's been the most valuable. I think, if anything, you could argue that the player performance and care team is the MVP of the Pelicans this season. And that was the group that they retooled this offseason, you know, parting ways with longtime person there, Aaron Nelson, mm-hmm. kind of listening to the players more about what they were looking for, what could help them with all of that. And I think that's done a wonderful job for this team, right? Zion Williamson has not missed back-to-back games this season. Brandon Ingram had only missed a handful of games, and going into last night was playing the most he's ever played as a New Orleans Pelican. There haven't been as many long-term injuries we've seen. Nothing's been truly catastrophic for this team. So what they did this past offseason to get people in a better spot, to get a little bit more buy-in, more trust from the players, I think has definitely paid dividends this season. And mm-hmm. it's no wonder that when they're healthy, this is a very good team, as we've seen. So that's really, I think, the group that is the MVP. But they definitely made the right moves, and you mentioned it. You know, guys are coming back from injury quicker. There's nothing keeping someone out for 30-plus games or something right. along those lines, that if there is a little bit of an injury, they're rehabbing well, they're getting back there on the court, and we're going to see a guy like Dyson Daniels come back, you know, who suffered a meniscus injury in the middle of the season. So I think that really says that they're definitely on the right track with keeping guys healthy.
Yeah, and to your point, look, a guy's going to have to step up and get in that starting role. Got injured twice in Trey Murphy. You know, a later state to the season, a little start to the season, kind of got nicked up again, missed some time, and got back as well. The importance of Trey moving forward here is the obvious, right?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. You know, you could almost argue that the remainder of the regular season might kind of hinge on him, assuming Brandon Ingram doesn't really play and maybe he's healthy for the postseason. You know, Trey Murphy is the guy that's likely slotting into the starting lineup. That's the guy that they're going to need to rely on to kind of shoulder some of that scoring load. The good news is he's proven he's capable of doing that. You know, he's also a deep threat, so that'll help space the court for Zion Williamson, which is going to be really important, too, as without Brandon Ingram, teams are going to key in on him a little bit more than they have in the past. So this is a guy that, you know, is going to get a ton of minutes, have a chance to really showcase himself and help push the Pelicans into the playoffs.
Is another reason that maybe I'm not, you know, kind of in a really terrible mood, because I think this team is deeper and they can handle this. Look, of that big three, some of those guys have missed some games, and they've act. I would say they're above 500, huh? When CJ or Zion or BI, you just mentioned 4-2, that this team's been able to win, I guess is what I'm getting at, Jake, without one of those big three in the lineup.
Yeah, you know, I think they're going to be tested with this, though. You know, it's not there's no replacing Brandon Ingram out there. And one of the things we've seen from him over the past couple of weeks is rather than be a scorer, he shifted more to a playmaking role. And they don't really have any replacement for that. And that's what's made him so successful and this team so successful, as, you know, they went 21-5 over 16-5 over a 21-game period before last night's loss. You know, there's no replacing that. They need that kind of shot creation, which is something that Trey Murphy doesn't exactly bring you. He can score, certainly, but he's going to need others to set him up with a lot of that as well. So that's something that I'm concerned about. And one of the things that New Orleans has also done this year that has gotten them where they are is they beat up on a lot of opponents' second units. The starters have been a little bit clunky this year. They haven't won their minutes to the degree that we really would have liked, but it's the guys coming in off the bench that have really pushed this Pelicans team over the edge. Right. Now with Trey Murphy into the starters, you lose a little bit about that, right? That's kind of been the Pelicans' secret weapon here, is some of their bench guys are absolutely going to punish opponents. You lose that with Trey Murphy, who was a big key to that. Maybe we'll see if it makes starters a little bit better, because spacing could be better. But again, they're lacking some playmaking there, and I think that might mean we see a little bit of a rough adjustment period as they figure out what to do without Brandon Ingram.
Makes it a little difficult when you look at what's coming up here. I mean, I said the gauntlet, the final 11, started with the homestand. But Jake, when you look at all the games, including last night, the Magic are trying to get in the fourth. They were half game back. The Heat are half game out of six. just like the Pelicans, trying to secure that first-round home series and be guaranteed four games. You look up and down that homestand, everything but the Spurs, essentially. I mean, these are all seeding games. I mean, even when they go on the road, the playoffs have started, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I actually said that on my show about a week or two ago, where every game going forward should feel like a playoff game for New Orleans because the Western Conference is really tight. You know, the Dallas Mavericks are kind of nipping at the heels of the Pelicans. So are the Sacramento Kings. Before their loss last night, the Kings have been playing some really good basketball. Though Dallas has been a little bit up and down, but with Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic there, you don't want to give them any sort of breathing room here. So the Pelicans' margin for error just got tighter, unfortunately. And, you know, while maybe they were going to push for home court advantage in the first round, that four seed, I think their goal right now is just maintain top six. They're two games up in the loss column on the Sacramento Kings for that sixth spot. So I think they're going to end up being okay. They're still going to win a number of these games on their schedule coming up. But when I looked at the schedule when it came out, you know, these final 15 games that they've had to play are absolutely brutal. There's a tough West Coast road trip in there as well.
Yep.
While the Phoenix Suns haven't been, you know, what we thought they might have been this season, there's still a lot of talent there that has given New Orleans, you know, trouble at times. You finish with a tough set against the Golden State Warriors and then the Los Angeles Lakers at home. This is not going to be easy sledding for New Orleans, and we're really going to get an idea of what they're made of over these next 2 to 4 weeks, I think.
All right, you know it's tonight. It's the Miami Heat. Jimmy Butler warned the Pelicans in the Smoothie King Center locker room. We can't wait to see you back in Miami. You add what happened last night. You add a loss. You add that you've got to get back on the winning track. This is tough on a back-to-back, no doubt. Miami hasn't played, and again, as I mentioned, they're trying to get out of the play-in. When you look at matchups, I know they got some injuries. I'm assuming, man, Adebayo and Jimmy Butler are playing today, even though they've been on the injury report. How do you look at this matchup? What does New Orleans have to do, Jake, to get the win tonight?
They're going to need to be ready for the physicality that the Miami Heat are going to bring. I think a little bit of the book is out on the Pelicans that if you play them really physically, they struggle with that. You know, Zion at times this year has struggled with some of the physicality that teams are throwing at him when he hasn't been getting some of the calls from the refs that maybe he should have been getting. You know, that's a way that you can really beat this team. And after what happened in the Smoothie King Center a couple of weeks ago with the fight that broke out, you know the Miami Heat are going to come in with a bit of an edge, a bit of an attitude. And New Orleans, you know, literally and figuratively can't be punched in the face here with this sort of thing, I think. And they need to be ready for that, knowing that they're going to have to kind of push back on this Miami team, be physical with them. That means, you know, maybe a lot of Jonas Valanciunas down low with Bam Adebayo. You need to kind of find the right guy to put on Jimmy Butler to try and slow him down a little bit. The Miami Heat added Terry Rozier at the trade deadline. That was a really good pickup for them as well, or on the buyout market, I think. And, like, that was important to do as well. So you need to kind of slow them down at the point of attack. If you can limit Jimmy Butler, you can beat this team, certainly. And I think that's really ultimately the key. But they're going to come out and try and punch the Pelicans in the face. And New Orleans needs to be ready for that.
Let's see what's going to happen. We'll be at Wrong Iron for an official Pelicans watch party. Me and Pierre may have to be downing some pints, man, depending how this game goes. But let's see what happens, Jake. Again, I'm with you. As good as it could be, let's see if this team can withstand it. And, playoff season is on, man. Thank you for your time today, bud.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, Gus.
At NOLA Jake is the way to give a follow. And, of course, you already do. You should be listening to Locked On Pelicans podcast. When we come back, Mr. Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers. The Tigers look to bounce back and win a SEC series. The Florida Gators, team they played in a national championship season ago. That's up today over at the Box. We'll talk to him next on ESPN New Orleans.
His legend lives on.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
Mr. Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers at LSU Tigers Voice, joins us as always, sir. Appreciate the time on a game day. How are you today?
I'm great, man. It's going to be a great time. Great day, great time of year. March Madness is underway. The Madness certainly was in full force in day one.
Right.
And we get some basketball to watch and, again, a rematch from the College World Series here at the Box. It doesn't get much better than this.
Yeah, no doubt. We're going to get into that here in a quick sec, but I got to imagine, it's probably some tailgating already going on here. The ladies look to start their defense of the national championship as Coach Mulkey and the Lady Tigers take on Rice coming up at 3 o'clock. obviously a lot going on the LSU Sports Radio Network and things of that nature. But when you talk to Patrick, how did he sort of feel about this run going into this season?
Well, I think, you know, they've been playing really good basketball and, you know, made it to the title game against another really good team in South Carolina. So, you know, I think they feel like they're playing where they need to be playing at this point of the season, which is a good thing. I mean, there's some similarities, guys, if you look to, you know, what they've been doing over the last 3 to 4 weeks of the regular season. You know, they get last year Poa back, which is huge after taking the spill in Greenville during the tournament and being out a couple of games, or at least one game. So, you know, I think they feel really good, and Patrick feels like this team is poised to make some noise, regardless of the seeding. I mean, you got to, you know, seeding helps. There's no doubt. I'm not going to say seeding isn't important. It is in any tournament. But this LSU team is loaded with talent. Mm-hmm. And if everybody plays their role and just does what they do best, they've got enough talent to beat anybody in the country.
Yeah, that regional, Chris, when it came out, I'm like, oh, wow, a couple of wins. You face UCLA, the 2 seed, and if you manage to do all that, and Iowa does what they do, it's a rematch for Caitlin Clark and Iowa just to get to the Final Four. So they'll be tested if they can get a couple of Ws. It's the old thing. I know coaches say it all the time and players, but you really do have to take it one game at a time and see what else happens, right? I mean, look, I don't think anyone really thought LSU and Iowa were going to play in a national championship. Other teams took care of other top teams, and that's what happens in March Madness.
You know, it's interesting. This won't be a popular take, Gus, but I stand firm on my belief that, you know, women's basketball in the SEC, pound for pound, I think prepares LSU for a postseason run as opposed to the men's this year. I mean, everybody talked about getting 7 or 8, maybe yeah, even 9 teams into the NCAA tournament. I just wasn't buying it. I just didn't think SEC men's basketball was all that good. I think it was competitive. That's why you had some of the top teams losing to some of the mid-tier and bottom teams throughout the season. But, hey, that's conference basketball. I just didn't think pound for pound SEC basketball was all that good, and put me one in the column that was not shocked yesterday. I mean, again, you don't expect Kentucky to lose to Oakland, but I didn't have anybody out of the SEC going beyond the Sweet 16, and I think for the women's side, conference play certainly prepared them against the other top teams who were number 1 seeds and number 2 seeds and number 3 seeds. So I think LSU women's basketball is in a good spot because I think they've been tested.
Yeah, last night or yesterday, Michigan State beat Mississippi State 69-51. You had South Carolina losing to Oregon 87-73. And then also, as you mentioned, Kentucky 80-76. I don't know if it's true or not, but people were posting that apparently the Kentucky message boards crashed last night with GIFs and mentions and such. And then Tennessee's the only one that got the win, 83-49. How good is Tennessee? Because obviously you saw it in a tournament at the SEC tournament. They had the possibilities. Many people had them as a 1 seed, and they didn't perform very well. But is that a team that's capable of making it deep?
That's the team I have going deepest in the NCAA tournament. And again, I don't have them getting out of the Sweet 16. Okay. And the only reason I say that is when I look at Tennessee, having seen them up close, having watched them quite a bit, they have all the ingredients. You know, this is, you know, Rick Barnes is a coach. His teams are always been known to play great defense. They hang their hat on that. And he's committed to that. I got a chance to watch their practice in Nashville, and it wasn't a walkthrough. It was a, you know, the sweat was flowing, and they were getting after it, mainly on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. But and this year's team, you know, when Dalton Knecht is going and Ziegler is going, they're a very good team. But like the rest of the top tier of the SEC, the only thing I can say is they're consistently inconsistent. I had no doubt, as good as Mississippi State was playing on the back end of the year, that Tennessee would be able to take care of them in the SEC tournament. And we all kind of were stunned that they got manhandled. Again, I think they are the team that is best built for it. I think the SEC's problem is they've got super talented teams. Auburn's super talented. Alabama's super talented. Kentucky's ridiculously talented. And Tennessee's talented. Problem is, I don't know if there's any of those teams that can win 4 or 5 games in a row without having a clunker thrown in there. And as we saw yesterday, Kentucky had their clunker right out of the gate for yet another year.
Yeah, I kind of feel, too, are we seeing a bit of a transition? And then we'll transition, obviously, to LSU and Florida, the weekend series here on the Diamond. But, Chris, are we starting to see, because Jay Wright mentioned it after the Kentucky loss, that maybe the days of the one and done and trying to bring these young teams playing against men with NIL now here, kids staying longer, teams having players for 2-3 years, that's not going to work anymore. Do you think we're going to see that transition? I'd love to see him go to, like, the baseball rule, right? If you're LeBron in them, enjoy the NBA. If not, we'll see you on campus for the next 3 years. I think they'll grow as players, as people, coaches, college basketball would benefit. That's my opinion. But do you think we're going to see a transition where the veteran players, your Villanovas, like, that's going to be the norm again, or is it cyclical? I don't know. What do you see?
Well, I think there's a big difference. It depends on what you're looking at. You know, I grew up in Kentucky, and I've got lifelong friends that are Kentucky fans. And, of course, the text thread was absolutely on fire last night into this morning. And, yes, the message board did crash. And, you know, I think they've kind of come to the realization that, obviously, all of college basketball, all of college sports has undergone a major transition. And there's, you know, they open up the portal on Monday, and before noon, there's 450 guys in the portal. That tells you that there's a lot of guys who can go out and play basketball and have one or two or sometimes 3 and 4 years of experience in Division I hoops. How many times years ago, even before Coach Cal was doing the one and done, which give him credit that he was one of the first to do it, if not the first in college basketball, and then a lot of programs followed suit. But you would always have this statement of sometimes they are incredible freshmen and sometimes they make those freshmen mistakes.
Right.
And you saw that last night from a Kentucky team that, again, one-on-one on a basketball court, I would probably, you know, put my money on those guys. I mean, they just have that type of skill. But, you know, as a team, they're not melded together. Decision-making, they haven't been in those situations. Each game is a new experience. So I think there is something to that. And Jay Wright, obviously, you know, he laid down the gauntlet that the days of the one and done and building a team around, wow, you know, 4 or 5 5-stars is not going to be able to compete with, you know, 21, 22-year-olds who have been through the battles and understand, you know, what needs, have situational awareness. I think that's what we're missing. And I think that's why you're seeing the NBA, you know, when it comes to a 22-year-old being developed for the game of basketball, I think there's a lot of eyes looking to the European markets as opposed to no what's doubt coming out of college basketball.
No doubt. They do a lot of the little things as well. They've been playing a little bit more team, I guess, oriented, if that makes sense. Well, Chris, obviously, let's transition to, as you said, the rematch of the national championship a year ago. Different teams, different years is how it works. The opening series against Mississippi State, just your overall thoughts, and then we'll preview this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think last week I give Mississippi State some credit. I mean, that, you know, I don't think LSU played its best, but I'm certainly not going to take away from what I think is a very good Mississippi State team. And while they maybe were a little under the radar coming into the season, I don't think they'll be under the radar very long. I mean, that's a lineup that doesn't have a whole lot of holes in it. They got some really good hitters, 1 through 9 in their order. But if you'd have told me, take away LSU coming off a title and take away Mississippi State coming off one of their worst years ever, 2 years removed from a national title. If you just said to me, LSU goes to Starkville, loses 2 out of 3, that's not a big shock to me. Again, you don't like it. Nobody wants it. But it's not maybe, without all the other narrative of Mississippi State's been so bad, well, they haven't been so bad. They had one bad year. And so, again, I didn't take a lot from it other than it's always tough to win in the SEC, add a little more difficulty when you go on the road.
Right.
Now, what I will say is because of the way the schedule lined up, which I find it funny because the SEC, of course, it's a computer that does it. Gus, I don't know if you knew that or not, but it's just odd after a national title that you get thrown an absolute gauntlet to start conference play. But it is what it is. I don't want to use the phrase must-win series.
Sure.
But you've got, you know, you lost 2 or 3 at Mississippi State last week. You got Florida coming in. You got to go to Fayetteville to take on Arkansas. You got Tennessee. You got to go to Tennessee. You know, the road doesn't get easy. And Vandy comes here. Yeah. I mean, suddenly every weekend becomes a must win. And again, only in terms of if you want to win the SEC. You know, all of these teams are going to have opportunities for postseason play. I'm just talking in terms of winning a conference championship.
Right.
That this is a very important weekend because you're playing at home against a good Florida team that many people left for dead after the second week of the season because they had struggles in the midweek. They had struggles this past week
right,
in the midweek. This is a talented team. You know, and Jay said it yesterday. You're looking at, you know, wow, these two teams met in Omaha and the drama of that three-game series, the way it went. But Tommy White was an everyday player for LSU. Handful of guys that had big roles for the Tigers. Jack Caglione was an everyday player for Florida. A couple of guys on this roster were big-time, you know, role players.
Right.
But you're looking at two different teams.
Correct.
Who are asking other players to step up in a bigger way. So I know the comparisons are going to be there. I get guilty of doing it as well. But these are two different teams, and it's going to come down to who executes in all phases of the game, you know, every inning and every game this weekend.
That's where I was going to go. I was listening Monday in Matt's show that follows us here. He brought it up. I didn't realize it. I mean, obviously. But what, seven? Is White the only everyday players? Like he said, essentially, like there's only really seven, nine. They lost seven everyday players, LSU, to the starting lineup there. That's a lot. It's kind of what we were talking about with basketball, right? I mean, you have to go through it. You have to know what it's like to be playing, what, Mississippi State had 14,000 or something like that. So you have to go through that again because it is a different team.
Absolutely. I mean, Dugas is gone. He was pretty much your everyday second baseman. Jordan Thompson had been your everyday shortstop for 3 years. Your outfield, I think, is still in flux as to who is going to be the everyday. Josh Pearson, while I think is earning that opportunity this year, I mean, he was a role player his freshman and sophomore season. And it's great to have guys, excuse me, like Josh Pearson to be quote-unquote role players. And, you know, Hayden Travinsky was injured a little bit. He played catcher, then he became DH. At the end of the season, he became really one of the best hitters in the country. But, yes, truly, your everyday player is Tommy White. Everybody else. Milam is a true freshman. Braswell transferred in, to LSU from South Carolina at shortstop. Pearson, who I mentioned. Paxton Kling, who was a spot player, especially in conference play last year, and then after the hamstring injury, missed a lot of time. And then in right field, you know, we've seen Brady Neal, we've seen Jake Brown, we've seen Ashton Larson. All of those guys, again, newcomers. Neal didn't play last year after being injured. So, yeah, I mean, the excitement is there because the talent is there, Gus. I mean, this is an incredibly talented team. But it's not comparing apples to apples to look to the 2023 team for a number of reasons. But beyond Paul Skeens not coming out of the dugout and beyond Dylan Cruz not headed to center field and Gavin Dugas who you could count on, it's because it's a different group of players who are at different levels of experience with handling different types of loads. And, you know, that's what Jay has been saying since day one, even before the season began. But, you know, it's like I talked to a fan after Coach's show on Monday night. If there's anybody who's going to have this team cooking when they need to be cooking, I think we've all figured out it's Jay Johnson. So, again, excited for this opportunity. It's, I think, one of the best rivalries in college baseball right now, and that's Florida and LSU because of the games they have played of late. The gravity of which those games have had, both in 2017 and last year in 2023. And here's something interesting. Kevin O'Sullivan, hired in 2008 to be the head coach of Florida, currently head-to-head with LSU, he's 24 wins, 21 losses. But Jay Johnson is 4-6 against the Gators since taking over at LSU. So, I mean, I think the Tigers are in good hands.
Get there early if you want to get your parking spots at 7 o'clock. It's going to be fun tonight, 6 o'clock tomorrow night, and on Sunday, 2 p.m. Weather should be nice, man. That rain's moved out. It's going to be a gorgeous weekend of baseball, LSU in Florida. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers. Thank you, bud.
Absolutely, Gus. Yeah, looking out the window, man. Blue skies, white puffy clouds. Going to be a great night to be at the box.
For sure. At LSU Tigers Voice, the way to follow on X. Thank you, sir. Quick break. We come back. Open phone lines if you'd like to chime in on the Ruderman Can guest and hotline, 800-998-1003. It's the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.
To the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
Hour one is brought to you by No Wake Outfitters, your one-stop shop for all things fly fishing on the Gulf Coast, including kayaks. 1926 Airline Drive is the way to chime in via the Ruderman caller guest hotline. 800-998-1003 is the way to do so. Our lead, which is always brought to you by Lakeview Massage and Therapy and Upper Cervical Family Chiropractic, was the Pelicans. And losing Brandon Ingram, the team reporting the MRI reveal that he had today that he had hyperextended his left knee, and that happened last night in the third quarter of the Magic game. The results of the MRI revealed a left knee bone contusion. Ingram will be reevaluated in 2 weeks. And additional updates are going to be appropriately provided. As we mentioned in that opening segment, back at 12, that's about 8 games before he gets reevaluated that you're going to miss. He's obviously not playing tonight against Miami. He's not going to be playing Sunday against the Pistons. And then you have the gauntlet. The gauntlet's already started. Let's just call it. It's postseason basketball now. But you have a six-game homestand. Six-game homestand starts Tuesday against the Thunder. They're pretty good. You got the Bucks. They're pretty good. We got the Celtics on Saturday before Easter. Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday next week, the first three of your six-game homestand. Then you got the team you played yesterday, the Magic. Then you got the Spurs next Friday. Now, two Fridays from now, that is the 2 weeks where he will be reevaluated. April 5th, that day, you take on the Spurs. So it is the entire homestand. Again, can he come back before then? Can he, I don't know, show signs? And dude, I don't know. But I'm just going by what they're saying. They're going to reevaluate. They're going to give him 2 weeks. They're going to reevaluate it and see where he's at. After that, you go to the Suns on the 7th, to the Blazers on the 9th, to the Kings on the 11th, the back-to-back Warriors on the 12th, and then you come back, fly Saturday, if you don't leave right after the game, on that Friday against the Warriors, and you take on the Lakers on Sunday in a 2:30 tip-off. So that is an unbelievably tough stretch there. Hopefully B.I. can be back by then. If not, you're in the postseason in the first round. If you can secure a six-seed or above, you will get that work week off. Last game of the regular season in the NBA, that Sunday the 14th. The first day of the postseason is the 20th. I'm not talking about the play-in. I'm talking the first round. So you would get that first, you get that week off if he hadn't come back by then. But again, the reevaluation's the 5th. The last game of the regular season's the 14th. It's a week and 2 days. And then if he was to play in the postseason, that's an extra 2 weeks from where this at here. So he's essentially got a month before the postseason. Now, obviously you want him back better and before then. Just kind of giving you that timeline as to where they are. Jack, sir, how are you today? How do your brackets look?
Oh, they look like garbage. That's part of the reason I called. Happy Friday, guys.
Happy Friday, man.
No, but Gus, I have two SEC teams getting to the Final Four and losing. And Alabama and Tennessee, I don't really feel good about that after watching yesterday and hearing LSU's announcer talk about it. It doesn't seem like I made a good move there. But my question for you is this. Did you see anybody yesterday that you wish you would have used? Now, I realize Oakland winning is, but I think they got a chance to go a little further. That team seems like they're pretty good. Did you see anybody else like that?
Not really, Jack, to be honest with you. I was interested to kind of see. I thought Oregon was going to play well just because of the way they looked in the Pac-12 championship game, and they looked pretty good. So I kind of like them. Iowa State looked about as good as I thought they did. Tennessee was that team that, I mean, obviously, St. Peter's and Tennessee, maybe two different levels on that. Creighton's a team that a lot of people thought can go far. They won 77-60. Against Akron. Was it you or was it John? John had Illinois going pretty deep. They won 85-69. Kansas, boy, did you see the block that was called a foul that would have given the ball to Samford down one with some time to at the very least see if they could win the ball game? And instead, the chase down block was called a foul and Kansas winds up winning 93-89. Did you see that play?
No, I didn't. And that's a shame. Because, look, I knew there would be one Cinderella, and I was hoping it was them. You know, because I heard all the talk. I listened to Jay Billich yesterday morning. He, he still thought Candace would win, but he said they had a lot of injuries, so I was hoping that they could get by. But no, I didn't see the play, though, to answer your question.
Yeah, go pull it up. You're going to be like, what? I mean, it was a pretty clean block, and it was a big play. And it would have been one of those things where, man, I think Samford wins that game, you know, Samford. I don't know. NC State getting the win over Texas Tech, 80-67. A little bit of a surprise. Dayton and Nevada, you kind of thought that was going to be a battle 63-60 there. What did you think of Texas? Did you get a chance to watch the Texas game? Lead. Yeah. What do you think of the Texas Colorado State game?
No, I didn't see that. I didn't see that game.
Yeah. I didn't get a chance to really pay attention to it too much, but because, again, Texas is one of those teams where I think depending on the day that I turn them on, they look good, and the other time they don't, I guess. I don't know. But I don't know. We'll see what takes place.
Gus, the other question I had for you is this. I realize this is going to be a moot point because the Saints are going to go 14-3, but you think that DA has a little more leeway than it would appear that he does. How many wins do you think he needs to keep his job?
Oh, Jack, I'm one of the few that I think, I mean, it would have to be a disastrous season. Like, right. Disastrous. Like, 3-win season. I think if he wins 8, 9, 10 games, shows promise, okay, do you not think this sounds plausible? Not saying it's likely. Not saying it's going to happen. Right. Not saying he won't. But plausible, right? Could you not hear plausibly, hates the first year of this offense. You're facing the AFC West with the defending champs. Jim Harbaugh is taking over the Chargers' second year of Sean. The Raiders will play hard for Pierce. The NFC East has the Cowboys who have won 13 games. You know, Dan Quinn and the Commanders are very competitive. I don't know what the Giants are going to be. I think the Eagles do bounce back this year. They made some moves. They've spent some money. They've gotten some players. So, plausibly, could you not hear them say, hey, of those 8 games, 6 are probably going to be pretty competitive. I mean, they're pretty good teams, I think, right? Right? And then let's get to the division. Tampa is going to be competitive, and everyone right now has the Falcons winning the division. So could you plausibly hear them saying, in theory, 12-14 of those games are against very good football teams, playoff-caliber football teams. We won 8 or 9 of them. We're looking forward to next year. I do.
Gus, I think if they win 8 or 9 games with the schedule they're going to have, I think he should get his job back. I just think that they're walking a fine line here. As you know, I know people are tired. Anybody who listens to y'all time is tired of hearing me, I know. But honestly, what I want them to do is this. Like, for instance, the Chase Young signing. I'm not criticizing the signing itself because I think he's trying to rebuild his career. Hopefully you get the guy who's hungry, who's trying to show people that he is the guy that was drafted, okay? The problem is, I don't think there's anything they can do to make themselves competitive in the NFC to get to the Super Bowl. They are currently 40-1 to get to the Super Bowl,
right,
and 100-1 to win. I don't think Vegas is wrong. But on the other hand, if you don't do anything, then DA almost certainly loses his job. So what do you do then?
I think this is why I've been saying it. I would have liked to have seen this approach 2 years ago. But I think it's best, and I think they should embrace it, and I think they should just go with it. Obviously, you're trying to compete, and you're not going to have a press conference and be like, hey, you know, we're going to give it the old college try. But, Jack, you're 100% accurate, and that's not you hating. There is no champ. The Saints are not in a championship window. I mean, they're not. I mean, they don't have. You need to know. Not hope, not let's see. You need to know you have an elite quarterback to compete for a Super Bowl. Don't you? Would you agree with me on that? Like, elite quarterbacks compete for Super Bowls. Okay. Well, we don't know that. We don't know that. We're just hoping that Derek Carr is good this year, right? I don't know if you have the weapons on offense because you haven't run a play in this new offense, which is why I keep saying Everything smells, looks, and tastes like this is a building of a new offensive era with the Saints. You got to get the right players. You got to get the specific people that do that. And then maybe eventually the quarterback that best fits it. It could be Derek. I don't know. But that is in a 3 to 5 month process. So realistically, this is the Saints offense, in theory, should be better next year after you've had a season to see if some of the parts and pieces right. you have work. So that's 2 years, right? Defensively, you are now in the process of retooling, of getting faster and younger. It's got to happen, right? I mean, whatever chase happens and works, whatever. But Cam Jordan likely won't be here. I don't even know if Marshawn Lattimore is going to be here this year. Tyrann Mathieu, bless his heart, he got that extension for 2 years. That's fine. But at some point, you're going to make a transition at safety, free and strong safety. So when you look at all of those different, you know, that doesn't sound like a championship caliber one piece away program. It's not. So I'm cool with it if you go about it that way. And let's see if they continue to do so come the draft and things like that.
And Josh, one last thing and I'll get out. You were talking about, a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about comparing the skill positions with the Saints compared to the other teams in the division. Okay, certainly if you were going by resume, you would say Alvin Kamara's had a great career.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you were going to make a trade right now, you would certainly take Bijan Robinson. He's much younger. Yeah. I mean, and you would certainly take the young tight end. I can't remember his name.
Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts.
Right. Okay, because this is the first time they actually get paid. They get to play with somewhere near an NFL quarterback.
Correct. Correct.
So that's what the
outcome is. Drake London isn't bad either. You know, their receiver, Drake London, isn't bad. I like the Darnell Mooney second, third receiver sort of thing there, you know? I think when you look at all of that, it makes sense, you know, to make sense. But we'll see, Jack. Thank you so much, man. Good luck for you, sir.
Have a good weekend.
All right, buddy. Appreciate it. Quick break. We come back. Hour 2 of the Sports Hangover on ESPN New Orleans.